All right, what's going on? This is the QTR Podcast Tax Day Edition, kind of. It's almost tax day. How the hell is everybody? Doing good? Everybody promptly turning over half their income to the government so we can immediately wire it to Ukraine and various art dealers for Hunter Biden's artwork. And what else are we spending money on? I don't know, but I just saw Jamie Raskin in front of Congress call ivermectin horse dewormer again. We're gone. How useless can one politician be? How can you fucking sit in front of Congress right now and say with a straight face, think first off, I know enough about ivermectin to comment on it, and then your first comment is, I believe it's an animal dewormer. Like, we haven't fucking been talking about it how blind to any facts at all. This is what happens when you don't do any research and your staffers just bring you your talking points on a sheet of paper. You would have to live in a goddamn cave. Even if you're a far left Democrat and you are against ivermectin, you would need to be on Mars to not understand that it's also a human medicine, let alone a Nobel Prize winning one. But Jamie Raskin sitting up there in front of Congress, I believe it's a dewormer. I believe it's an animal dewormer. Is that what you believe? Fucking useless. Anyways, that's besides the point. That was just a quick aside. This podcast, like all of my podcasts, brought to you by my patrons. Patrons are people that sign up on Patreon, donate a monthly recurring sum to help support the podcast. I'm going to shout them out, and we will get started with my buddy Mark Spiegel in a second. First and foremost, I want to shout out my exclusive gold and silver providers over at JM Bullion. I know known JM Bullion for years now. They have been in business for over a decade. They've done over $7 billion in sales. They always have great inventory. They ship discreetly. Their premiums are manageable, and they're generally great people to work with. And by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that gold is at a new all-time high yet again. So every time over the past 10 years that everybody has called you a crackpot or an idiot or a conspiracy theorist or a moron for saying you should buy gold, every single time you've said you should buy gold, you're in the green right now. Effective today, gold has never been higher. And so that means that anytime you've bought it, you're in the green. And that is, I would say, a pretty good track record. People be like, well, what is it versus the S&P? Well, what is it on a fucking log scale? Well, what is it versus inflation? Hey, go fuck yourselves, all right? Green is green, and that's the way it works. And you're going to see some real shit here now that the Fed's backed into a corner. We're only getting started, all right? Wait till you start seeing $300-$500 an ounce moves overnight. Anyways, if you are interested in buying gold and silver bullion, email Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at jmbullion.com. She's there exclusively for QTR Podcast listeners, and I just absolutely love and trust JM Bullion. Please give them a shout if you're in the bullion, if you're in the market for some gold and silver bullion, and who shouldn't be? This podcast also brought to you by my friends over at Rebel Capitalist Pro. My friend George Gammon has teamed up with Chris McIntosh, Lynn Alden, and people like Brent Johnson to help bring you numerous ways to help preserve your wealth in a world of out-of-control central banks. I've noticed George starting some shit on Twitter recently, talking about kind of almost taking an anti-gold stance, and that's why I like him. You know, he's able to articulate himself well. He brings arguments to the table that not a lot of the other people have, despite seeing the central bank Ponzi scheme for what it is, like the rest of us do. George always has a different take on things, and that's why I love reading his forums, watching his live free videos on his Rebel Capitalist and George Gammon channels. Reach out to George if you want to try Rebel Capitalist Pro. I think it's worth it. You get access to premium research from people like Lynn Alden and Brent Johnson. You get all their live Q&As. You get mock portfolios, things like that. For me, I think it's well worth it. Shoot George a message. Tell him you heard on the QTR podcast that he would give you a free trial, and I'm sure he will because he's a damn good guy like that. George Gammon, love you. Link is in the podcast description. And finally, my only Bitcoin sponsor, probably forever. This is it. I'm riding with it's a ride or die, I think, with Swan for me. But my friends over at Swan, which is really, I think, the best way to buy Bitcoin. It helps you buy Bitcoin on a recurring basis. You can set it and forget it, like the fucking Ronco Showtime Rotisserie Grill. Remember those infomercials? He said how much you want to buy on a daily or weekly basis. The app does the rest for you. There's nothing to think about. I know the people over at Swan. I've talked to them extensively. As much as, you know, and I've said this before, there is risk in Bitcoin. I don't allocate to Bitcoin the way I do with gold, but that's just me personally. But I think if Bitcoin is going to make it, then Swan are the people I want to be riding with. And so that may be a little bit more of a conservative stance than they would like me to say, but I have to be honest with my listeners also. I like Swan, though. I like the people involved over there. My friend Larry Lepard's involved over there. My friend James Lavish, I think, is involved over there. Lynn Alden, I know, I think, sits on the board of directors over there. So at least, at the very least, I can do is vet the company and vet the people involved, though I can't tell you what Bitcoin is going to do. Look, the Swan app, you can start buying in about 2 minutes. There's no fees on your first $10,000 that you buy now, which is insane. You're not going to find anywhere else that's doing that. I don't think Robinhood or Coinbase or any of those people are doing that. So you can go in, buy $10,000 worth of Bitcoin with no fees. And the way to do that is to go through my link, because you immediately get $10 in Bitcoin free. And that link is in my podcast description. So if you want to give Swan a try, use my link. If you want to give JM Bullion a try, email Laura at jmbullion.com. And if you want to bother George Gammon, just figure out a way to bother him and tell him that I sent you. I do like Swan. Maybe we'll talk some Bitcoin with Mark. We'll see what kind of mood he's in. I'm guessing we'll probably talk some Tesla. Let me get this guy on the line here, and we're going to get started. Oh, by the way, I'm not an investment advisor. This is not investment advice. I hold no licenses, no registrations. You should generally be doing your research elsewhere. I don't have much of a clue as to what I'm talking about. You should read all pertinent disclosures and disclaimers. There's a bunch of them on my Substack. It'll tell you just exactly how big of an idiot I am so that you can wrap your head around it before taking in the information that is contained herein. How's that for a legal disclaimer? All right. All right, I have from Stanfield Capital, my friend Mark Spiegel. How are you today, sir? My long-standing returning champion to the show here.
it's great to be back on this show. It's really quite an honor, considering.
Is it?
You don't do these shows that often anymore, and I think you're a funny guy. You crack me up. You know, sort of out of left field, good stuff. So yeah, I'm happy to be here for sure.
Jesus Christ.
I forgot to mute my phone.
I'm honored to be here. Excuse me. I've got to take this call.
That was my psychiatrist calling, asking what the fuck I'm doing on this podcast.
No.
I cut him off.
All right, good. Yeah, you can get back to him afterwards. We'll get you some good trauma here over the next hour, so you have some things to discuss.
Yeah.
Listen, first off, yeah, no, I'm only doing about two shows a month, but I like it like that. You know, my thing is, like, at some point I start thinking, am I repeating the same guest? But I just don't care. When I started in 2018, I wanted to talk to the people I wanted to talk to. When I lose interest in people, I stop talking to them. When I find interest in new people, like I'm trying to get this dude James Lavish on soon, super smart guy. This dude Harris Kupperman, I'm trying to get on also too. You know, then I bring on some new people. So there'll be some new people coming on. But I'm always happy to have you on, because it's always interesting discussing the Tesla saga. And let's just get right into it, because I want to talk macro too. I read your letter every month that you publish it, and there's a lot to say on macro, but let's just start on Tesla. I mean, the year has been a nightmare, and I know, because on my blog, I put shorting Tesla as like one of my 24 ideas for the year. You know, I really think that we peaked out, I think, late 2022, early 2023. Way too many bullets still in the air for this dude to dodge. And so far this year, it looks like things have just collapsed in terms of sentiment, in terms of everything operationally, in terms of his inability to, you know, finesse his way out of situations by lying generally. What I find interesting now is this $170 level. So let's just get right in and talk to that. I mean, given the news that we've seen over the last month or two, right? The operations are crumbling. Q1 was a huge delivery miss. He has all of this exogenous regulatory risk still out there. He's now put himself and his team in the fire with needing to come up with something other than a dancing robot in a human suit, or a dancing human in a robot suit on August 8th, right? Because he lied about having humanoid robots and he put together nothing. Now he's trying to position himself as an AI company. I mean, it just feels like the wheels should be falling off far more than they are. And is that, what is that? What the hell is keeping the stock at $170 a share right now?
Well, I mean, there are two possible explanations, because I don't think any fundamental institutional investors are getting long this thing at this point. I mean, there might be some who still hold it, who believe, but there's no new ones coming in. One possible explanation is just massive worldwide retail buying, you know, right. India, Korea, Germany, you know, just massive, right? And then the other possible explanation is somebody is illegally propping up the stock through options with an offshore account. And you know, now you might ask, well, who would spend millions and millions of dollars to do that? And I mean, it might be somebody who had tens of billions worth of the stock, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, you think that's happening?
I don't know. I mean, who the hell knows? It's absolutely uncanny what happens with this stock, right? I mean, anyone who's observed this for a long time knows when really bad news hits, miraculously a bid shows up, right? Now, we know for a fact that there is not a security law under the sun that Elon Musk would not happily violate. I mean, there's a lot of other laws he happily violates too. So, but do I have any proof of that? No. Am I accusing him of that? No. I'm saying that it's something that for sure, if we had an SEC that gave a shit about anything but climate change and, you know, finding investment banks for people texting at each other, it's something that should be looked at. But, you know, so far this guy still seems to have regulatory immunity, you know, notwithstanding the fact that the Wall Street Journal said the DOJ had convened a grand jury to talk, you know, with an investigation going on last fall. But we've heard nothing since then. And that was like, what, 6 months ago or something. So there's no explanation. I mean, look at the stuff with NHTSA. I mean, any other car, not just the autopilot and full self-driving crap, but any other car that had the steering lock and the random slamming on the brakes on the highway, which I guess sort of is autopilot, and you know, a bunch of unexplained charging battery fires. If the manufacturer didn't voluntarily do the recall, which a number of them have with similar incidents, then the NHTSA would step in and do it. But it's this we've been talking about this story for as long as I've known you, right? Which is 8 years or something. He just, you know, for whatever reason. Look, you know, people say, well, he's got the defense contracts. They want the spy satellites. Listen, if you got a contract with SpaceX, fuck him. You got a contract with SpaceX. He could go to fucking jail, and SpaceX has to honor the contract. And I assume its investors would want it to honor the contract. And he's, you know, he just shows up for the rocket launches there and some other. I mean, he has hands-on people running that company. That's the only reason the goddamn rockets get up in the air in the first place. Yeah, the one he's involved with is the one that keeps blowing up.
The idea that he is this, and we talked about this on a private email chain that me and you have with a couple people, but the idea that he is running around and is this super busy guy, and he's like so revered. Every time he goes on a podcast, people are like, SpaceX, Tesla, the Boring Company, how do you do it? Like, how do you stay on top of it? Well, he doesn't, you know, he's got people running all of these things. You know, if he's got time to sit on Twitter 10 hours a day and live stream playing fucking World of Warcraft or whatever he's doing on Twitch while making stupid memes, it just goes to, you know, people that are getting shit done don't have the time to do that. Somebody like, I don't know, Satya Nadella, right? He's running Microsoft. He's not fucking off all day streaming on Twitch, playing Xbox, making fart jokes. You know, he's getting shit done, and he's only got one company to deal with. So your level of involvement in your business comes out in how much time and actions that you have, you know, your actions that kind of show the public how much time you really do have on your hands. And this idea that people are just like, wow, you know, and he is like, he's like George Costanza in the Seinfeld. Like, I just walk around annoyed all day, looking annoyed, and people think I'm working hard. You know, this idea that he's just like, oh, I'm exhausted and I'm sleeping on the factory floor and I've sold all my assets and I'm doing it all for the employees. It's like, it's just such a crock of shit. And it's so obvious. Just like, you know, just like, here's a question for you, Mark. How many news articles have come out, let's say in the last 2 years, that have had a negative impact on the company's stock that he has not immediately come out and just said false or lying? All of them, right?
Well, we talked about, so that story last week from Reuters essentially said two things. Thing number one is that the low-cost $25,000 car, let's call it the Model 2, has been canceled. And they will instead turn their efforts into trying to develop robo-taxis. Musk immediately rebuts it with, Reuters is lying as usual. Well, okay, so what happened after that? He announced that they're going to show a robo-taxi in 4 months. We'll talk about that. That's obviously just bullshit. So what were they lying about? They are showing, he did immediately say, so are they lying that the Model 2 was canceled? Is the model still happening? Why doesn't he say that? And if it was canceled, or even, you know, it's certainly the company should announce something, since I actually spoke with some very, very big institutional investors who, stupidly, in my opinion, were willing to give this company a chance as it gets closer to Model 2 launch time, right? So this is material. This is the whole growth of the company in the mind of a lot of people. And was it canceled or not? Was it, or maybe, you know, maybe it was postponed till 2028 or 2029, which is also possible, right? But I mean, there's no 8K about this. This company, you know, there's no 8K about anything. Musk just calling Reuters, saying Reuters was lying as usual. He's a scumbag. I mean, he's just an obvious scumbag. So,
well, and the article looked like it was sourced. Right. They made specific
claims. It was well sourced. And by the way, there's nothing as usual. The last article was of major import was that they lied on the range meters to fool people. So when people would get in the car, they'd think there was whatever, 400 miles of range. And then about halfway through the battery or whatever, it would suddenly drop to what the real range was, which was left, you know, which was a fraction of that. So he said they were lying about that. Meanwhile, they had all kinds of proof that it wasn't a lie, all kinds of testimony from insiders, and the DOJ was adding that to its investigation. So, you know, he's a liar who calls people liars when he's been caught lying. That's the bottom line.
That's actually, I think you nailed it right there. And I wrote in this article last week or this week called The Musk of Desperation that I wrote that,
that was excellent, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I wrote that the finesse, like there's no finesse. There used to be some finesse in like rebutting these things, but now it has just become like by rote. And so people see that, you know, the amount of time that it takes him to call somebody a liar when something negative about the company comes out. And he's done it to everybody, not just Reuters. He's done it to the SEC. He's done it to, you know, the victims of people that have died in the autopilot accidents. Every single person that has said a bad thing about him, he has immediately come out. You know, he's like Trump. He just comes out and says he's lying. He's wrong. He's highly overrated. You know,
that's a good impression.
but I mean, that's his thing, right? He just says no and then just deflects and goes on. And it's sick because, look, on one hand, people are starting to understand it. And there were a lot more people on social media last week critical of how quickly he responded than I think normally would be. But on the other hand, what happened, right? The stock went back up above where it was.
Well, let's hang on.
Wait.
Let's hang on, because this is interesting. So the stock was down, I'll make up a number, as much as $6 on that story, $7, something like that, right? He comes out, he says, Reuters is lying. It only bounced back to roughly down $3 or something.
Right.
And then it started drifting back down again. The only way he got it higher was after hours when because he saw that bullshit didn't work. So then after hours, he tweeted the new bullshit, which is showing the robo-taxi on August 8th, 88. So, and I'm happy to talk about why that will be total nonsense, you know, when you're ready.
Yeah, and we definitely will. I have a list of shit here, but I just want to stay on this that, you know, after the fact too, and he did this also with the deliveries, right? The deliveries were a mess. And so what was the response to that? It's okay, well, we're not a car company. Tesla is an AI / robotics, an AI and robotics company, he says. So he pivots because if the valuation and the stock price is dependent
it's the old stock scam, stock promoter bullshit, of course. Yeah.
Well, what do you think his margin call level is at?
I think it's nowhere near what I thought it might be. And the reason I say that is one of the very smart guys I follow on Twitter, I forget his handle, but I don't follow that many people.
He said 100, right?
What's that?
He said 100 even, that guy, right?
No. I theorized it might be around 100. And he pointed out to me correctly that at least according to the last proxy, that they put in an internal limit of a $3.5 billion maximum amount of borrow that the CEO can do. Now, that said, the last proxy was over a year ago, so they're due for one. I think it's by the end of April. I forget the law on that, but pretty close anyway. You know, Musk would have no trouble disregarding any kind of internal rule such as that. But we can't really say if that rule is in effect and obeyed that the margin call is an issue, because he's got like 414 million shares of stock, I believe. So if he really only did borrow $3.5 billion, you know, he's got plenty of room before he'd have a margin call, even at 25%. Loan to value, which was another rule in there. He's allowed that. So that means he would only need, if he was actually obeying that, he would only need, what, $14 billion worth of stock to support the maximum margin he could have. So that's a much lower price if you've got 414 million shares. You know?
Well, doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't have to be a margin call. It could be a re-rating. It's just, I don't know. To me, it never feels... But I mean, it's been like that for 8 years. It's never felt natural. It's never felt, you know, just that he can just come out and say, it wasn't me. Reuters is lying. It's not right. It's not true. You know, and all of a sudden, oh, everything's fine. You know, oh, by the way, robo-taxi coming. It's like, where's the fucking, and here's the thing with juggling these bullshit balls in the air one after the other, right? And so the death circle here has been, and I wrote it in my article, so I'm going to read it to you. Real quick at the very bottom. The death circle for him has been this. The lower the stock goes, the more he has to lie to try to prop it up to prevent being margin called, or just to prevent, you know, the house of cards from collapsing. The more lies he tells, right, the more consequences he sets up for himself and his team in trying to deliver on whatever the claims are that he lies about. And those claims have to get grandiose further and further as far, you know, further along he goes. It's like quantitative easing. It's like Musk quantitative easing. Then the more claims he can't deliver on, the more the regulators take notice, and the more of a fool he makes of himself. And the more of a fool he makes of himself, the more targets he misses, the lower the stock goes, and the less confidence the customers and shareholders have in him. And then the cycle has to repeat itself. So what we're seeing with, like, the Cybertruck, right, was like, all right, here's the bulletproof windows. And then all of a sudden they throw a couple of metal balls at the windows, and he makes a fool out of himself. And, like, okay, well, that thing has, like, completely bombed now, right? The Cybertruck is pretty widely recognized as a pile of shit, as everybody knew it was going to be. So then he pivots from that to the robotics thing. And, you know, that launch was a disaster and a nightmare. And that thing's going to be a piece of shit, I'm sure. Then you still have the semis and the roadsters, which have been promised, which haven't happened yet. And you still have, you still have fucking full self-driving, which is really the underbelly of everything, and the robo-taxis that still is not past, you know, level 2 autonomy. And so now he makes this claim, robo-taxis, and you and I both know what's going to happen, right? Which is he's going to deliver either another timeline or a prototype or something that buys him another year or two until he fucks up again and has to make some other promise. But, I mean, it really seems like he's in a circle of not being able to deliver now, doesn't it? I mean, he delivered the Model 3. He got it out there. You know, he hasn't had a new model since then. He's made modifications to it. Doesn't it feel like it's really starting to slip out of his grasp here, or am I just imagining things?
No, look, I mean, the reason I've been short this for so long, I just can't believe it's taken as long as it has. But by the way, I mean, we should keep in mind that the market's at all-time highs, and Tesla's all-time high was set over $400, in 2021. So
yeah, that's a good point.
It's clearly in a very long-term downtrend. And, you know, even though it's still a complete bubble and a fraud at the current market cap. So, look, I mean, the thing on this robo-taxi nonsense is, you know, maybe he'll show a car with no steering wheel and say, oh, yeah, and pretty soon it'll be a working robo-taxi. We know for a fact his technology sucks for autonomous driving. I mean, the latest version out, 12.3, whatever. You know, I spent a lot of time going through fanboy, you know, comments on Twitter and stuff. And then there's plenty, of course, non-fanboy comments. I mean, what's his name? Dan, the Dawn Project guy, the software.
Dan O'Dowd.
O'Dowd. I mean, he showed a video this morning, I think it was, of this thing hitting a mannequin in the middle of the road, simulating a kid, right? So it just whacks it three times. They tried it three different ways. But anyway, you know, all these people are like, oh, it's so improved. I only had one intervention in 30 miles. I only had one intervention in 40 miles, you know. I drove 8 miles to work and had no interventions. Okay, let's take a step back. And I tweeted one simple thing about this, I think Monday morning. Let's take a step back. Let's be really fucking generous and say it only needs one intervention every 100 miles, okay, which I have not even seen any fanboy been able to claim and prove, okay? And let's just say that only half of those interventions would have resulted in an accident, okay? The other ones were whatever a minor intervention is. That means if this were a robo-taxi, it would be crashing once every 200 miles, okay? That's 1.5 crashes for every recharge of the fucking taxi, right? You charge it up for 300 miles, it crashed 1.5 times on average in those 300 miles. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, if a taxi goes, I don't know, probably 50,000 miles a year for a taxi, but just say 30,000 to make, you know, if it's crashing every 200 miles, it would crash millions of dollars worth of crashes per year. I mean, the system is crap. For somebody to say, look, you know, people who are ignoramuses say, oh, it's a great party trick. Look what it can do. And I only had an intervene with it once every 30 miles and it did all this neat stuff. Okay, great. That's completely fucking useless for a business standpoint or a safety standpoint. I think that the numbers for the average person, and I looked this up and put this stuff on Twitter, the average person has a car accident once every 200,000 miles. That's the average, like a crash that does damage to the car once every 200,000 miles, okay? So until it can do that, it's not even as good as the average American driver, right? And now it's like, let's say, one every 200 miles, it would have a crash if there was nobody behind the wheel. It's absurd. It's so absurdly far from being anything useful. These morons are mesmerized by this little party trick. But so what? It's not a robo-taxi. And I don't even understand. I mean, these people are like, oh, it makes things so relaxing. If you have to sit there,
I would be nervous as fuck. Yeah, I would be.
Yeah, and worry that in Musk's own words, it might do like the worst thing at the worst time or whatever the fuck he says. I mean, who needs that? It's like you're driving the car and your passenger might jerk the wheel at any time, right? It's just jackassness. So, but you know what? That's what I'm saying. So who's buying this now? It's either, I mean, no institutional guy. I mean, there might be a couple of idiots out there. I hear them every once in a while on CNBC, but no real big money guy is going to fall for that crap. So it's either massive retail, which is possible, I guess, if, you know, because if it's every retail investor in the world, Maybe they can move a stock this big. Or, you know, it's somebody's offshore account, you know, propping it up with options. Well, right? I mean, so, you know.
I saw a similar video this morning, also from a bull, which is interesting, you know. And it was same thing. My version 12.3.9, whatever the latest is, he just said just blew right through a stop sign. I don't know if you saw this video. It was on Twitter today.
Yes, and that guy O'Dowd posted it, I think, and I retweeted it, I think.
But it was a bull that posted it. He must have retweeted it. It was a bull that posted it initially. And the stop sign is right there, and it's clear as day, and it divided the road. And this thing, it never even slowed down. It's, you know, the Tesla's Tesla's doing like 55 and just fucking keeps going right through it. I'm like, oh my God, you know, in terms of autonomy, stop signs are pretty much like blocking and tackling, you know,
I mean, listen, I can't emphasize it enough. If this robo-taxi or this full self-driving or whatever they fucking autopilot, if it would crash without a human there, if it would crash more often than once every 200,000 miles, it's worse than the average human driver.
Right.
That's it. Bottom line. That's it. Right. And right now it's about once every 200 miles. Right. Which means it's 1,000 times worse than the average human driver. And these jackasses are so impressed about, you know, the 55 times it didn't run the stop sign. Well, guess what? You know, if you're a human driver, you know, you drive 15,000 miles a year, and it's a very high probability that you never needed to intervene with yourself, right? You drove. So these people just have no, it's just such basic common sense. It's, you know, so anyway.
Well, but
so,
then you got guys like Ross Gerber, who, when he's talking to Jim Chanos about Tesla putting robots in its factory, Chanos goes, well, Ross, there's been robots in auto factories since the 1980s. And Gerber's response is, yeah, but those were dumb robots. These are smart robots.
I mean,
like that's what you're dealing with on the other side of the coin.
But Gerber's a fucking moron, and he doesn't have enough money to prop up a $500 billion
stock. I'm not talking about him propping it up. I'm just talking about the general.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, I'm not sure that there are enough morons out there with enough money to prop up a $500 billion.
Are you serious? Don't you live in fucking Manhattan? They're everywhere.
Oh, no. Manhattan, we're all smart here.
Oh, yeah. I was just in Manhattan. I'm sure we could trade examples.
We have a lot of crazy homeless people and gang members. I'll give you that. But, you know, I think your average gang member, if you sat them down, would say, yeah, that Tesla, that's bullshit. Let me go deal my drugs.
Yeah. No way, man. I ain't getting in that car. That shit'll kill you, man.
I didn't sneak in here from Nicaragua to get that fucking thing.
Fuck, fucking car's crazy, Holmes. I ain't getting in. I think it's possessed.
But anyway, so look. So every legitimate robo-taxi, and by the way, even once Tesla finally gets a robo-taxi, if ever, there's already a shitload of them on the road now, just like the robots. I mean, Jim Chanos tweeted yesterday about Hyundai. Hyundai has robo-taxis on the road now, and it owns Boston Robotics, right?
Yeah.
And it has a market cap like a tiny fraction of Tesla.
Yeah.
But every single legitimate robo-taxi out there uses LiDAR, every single one, and radar. And Tesla has neither in its cars. I think it had radar for a while. Maybe it still has radar in the Model S and X. I'm not sure. But they have no LiDAR. So you have to record, apparently, in California. You have to report how many autonomous testing miles you do every year.
Right.
It's my understanding that their most recent reports, in fact, all say zero. They've tested zero autonomous miles. So what the fuck is he going to show? Even if he shows something with no steering wheel and a LiDAR dome on top, it's completely untested. I mean, he's got no product. As I said on Twitter the other day, him showing that car and saying, this is a robo-taxi and it's going to work great like a robo-taxi, you know, soon. That's exactly the equivalent of what's her name showing the Theranos blood machine, right? And which, oh yeah, this is our blood machine. It's going to work great. And it's the equivalent of Trevor pushing the truck down the hill, right?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, unless Musk says, we've never tested it, we've never tried it out, it's going to take years, that would be the honest thing. He's not going to say the honest things. He's a scumbag. So, you know, the whole thing is absurd. Who knows what else? And look, I joked about it on Twitter, but the way this thing happened right after that Reuters story, this was not fucking planned. There's no
it wasn't. No, it absolutely was not.
And
it absolutely wasn't. That's what I was talking about in my article. It's so fucking obvious,
yeah.
Right? That, like, the stock starts to fall, a bad story comes out, and he's, like, in Spaceballs, you know, when the guy's like, do something, and he turns around to another guy, and he's like, do something, and he gets on the fucking microphone, and he's like, do something, you know?
Yeah.
Just anybody do anything.
And now they all have to scramble around and come up with some phony, fraudulent, pseudo robo taxi in 4 months.
Well, and they're not. You think they would introduce LiDAR after all the shit that he said about LiDAR? Like, how fucking stupid would he?
So he's really in a box there, because to have a robo taxi, they need LiDAR,
and if they put LiDAR on it, it invalidates all the fucking hardware that they've already sold and promised everybody was what they needed for full self driving.
Exactly, he sold $250 billion worth of cars that he said had all the hardware they needed for full self-driving, you know? I mean, talk about a fucking lawsuit, right? The whole thing is nuts.
Lawsuit? How does he get away with it? It's 2024.
Well, the
right
way
now,
so
okay,
so
I just did my 2023 taxes. He started talking about full self-driving in 2016.
Well, there's two answers. When he sold the cars, he would always say, you know, by the end of this year, hands-free driving on city streets, you know, but there was always a disclaimer like, this is our best guess, this is our best opinion, right? So unless you, I don't know if you can convict him of fraud unless you find a smoking gun of email threads saying, hey, I know this is bullshit, but I'm going to say it anyway. But that said, they did find a smoking gun of that video in 2016 with the Painted Black, the Stone song on the soundtrack. And at the beginning, they go, the driver, you know, this driver isn't doing anything. He's only here for legal purposes. When in fact, they had to splice together, you know, a whole bunch of separate pieces in order to make it look like one continuous run. And that's blatant fraud. That's pushing a truck down the hill. Listen, it comes back to what we said at the beginning of the conversation. How the hell is this guy not in jail for that, or, you know, in court for that? Or maybe he will be from the DOJ, the way that story said. I mean, it takes a while for them to put a case together. It's pretty clear that Musk despises Trump, especially because Trump hates electric cars. Yet he's gone over to the Trump side. You know, he meets with Trump, blah, 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 because he's praying that either the DOJ will drop the case because he'll be able to claim it looks political because he supports Trump. Or he's praying that if Trump gets in, Trump will drop the case because Musk kissed his ass.
Agree.
Right?
Yeah, I agree 100%. So, I wrote that a while back. This pivot to the right has been a strategy move, you know, on his behalf, because he's in deep shit. And I think, you know, if Biden... I mean, look, if Biden wins, we're going to have a lot of other problems to talk about. But if Biden wins, I mean, I think that at some point in that next term, he's toast.
Yeah, yeah. And look, he may be toast, you know, in the Trump term. I mean, look, you know, I pointed out, I was at dinner with some guys the other day, and they talked about, what's his name, Bankman-Fried. Bankman-Fried, they told me, I don't know if this is right, but it sounds right, was like the number one campaign contributor to Democrats.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, he was. I don't know if he was number one, but he was a huge
campaign
contributor.
So Biden's a Democratic administration, and Bankman-Fried is doing 25 years in jail. So
well, yeah, but that was so obvious, and that was like a full collapse right there. Everybody saw it. There was no getting around it. There's a lot more gray area with this Tesla thing.
Well, let's back up a second to answer your question. So apparently Tesla has. Every single person who buys a car has to agree to arbitration. So somebody tried to do, I believe, a class action lawsuit about full self-driving being the fraud that it is, and it got thrown out of court because the judge said, no, everyone signed arbitration. You can't do a class action. So that means each person would have to sue them individually, which I think people have. I think some people in Europe, in Germany or something, I believe, sued and won an individual settlement. So it bounces back to, well, who's going to do this? Well, I believe a state attorney general or a group of them could get together, you know, and sue the company because they're not subject to any kind of arbitration agreement. They didn't buy the thing. And or the FTC could do it or something, but nobody does anything with this guy, seemingly, other than you hear these stories about behind the scenes stuff happening. So just
going back to what we were talking about before, didn't they also just find that he had a duplicate Twitter account that he like deleted on the day that?
Discovery. Yeah. And I'm sure he's got more than one. Look,
what happened in that instant?
He had some Twitter account that was relevant to the case, and the day I think the day the judge granted discovery, if I read it right, he deleted the account. It's quite a coincidence, but he doesn't give a fuck. He doesn't care about any law. He thinks he's above the law, and he's got lawyers so we'll get him out of it, or if he has to pay a small fine, whatever. But look, you know, at the end of the day, this guy will go down, okay? Everyone like this eventually goes down. They push things too far.
Yep.
Some ambitious attorney general, you know, decides to make him his project, you know, whatever. He will, you know, enough former employees whistleblow. He'll go down, you know, and that'll be it. So, you know, and look, in the meantime, as I said on Twitter, you know, look, obviously I've been short this for a while and, you know, It was actually pretty profitable for us until last year when it had a huge run. But, you know, it's come off a good amount this year. And, you know, we're down somewhat on it, probably not huge on it. But to me, it's an opportunity. When Reuters puts out that story and he says they're lying and the stock bounces, okay, I'll short more, you know, because I know they're fucking not lying, you know.
Right. And so, I mean, what do you think about the really horrible, I don't want to say horrible, tepid reception to the Cybertruck though so far?
Well, it's interesting, actually. So, yeah, clearly it was untested. You see all the people that are, like, just bricking themselves. And one guy, I think, had bricked it in, like, 1 mile or 5 miles after leaving the, you know, the Tesla store to pick it up. But, you know, they're bricking all over. When they run, it's gotten some interesting reviews. I think Motor Trend and one of the British car magazines said it wasn't very truck-like, that it was pretty interesting to drive. They were impressed with the acceleration. But, you know, it's a big, massive, ugly thing, and it's not really practical at all as a truck. So who's the – and if you drive it, you look like a giant loser douchebag. So who's the buyer for that thing, you know? I mean, you know, and it's a niche product, especially at that price. So – you know, maybe they can get it up to selling 50,000 a year to douchebags willing to spend that kind of dough. Even the one next year that's supposedly going to be cheaper, who knows if we'll ever see that, a cheaper one, right? So, you know, maybe they could sell 30,000 a year, 50,000 a year worldwide, some number, but that doesn't impact the company. You know, that's an insignificant number relative to what they need to move the needle at this point. I mean, you know, last year they did, I think, $96 billion of total revenue, and I think 94% of that was the auto business, yep. Right? So it takes a lot to move the needle. Even that Model 2, which would have had probably almost no margin to it, even that would not have moved the profit needle very much, and it probably would have cannibalized, you know, the Model 3 and the Model Y to some extent, too, so... But the other thing
is, you look at the secular shift too in EVs and kind of how everything is moving. There's definitely been a correction here away from battery EVs and a little bit more towards hybrid. But then you just look at some of the competitors' products and, you know, what used to be a story of, you know, all these competitors are going to have products, which I remember you've been crowing about since 2016. Turned into there are some serious fucking competition on the market. You look at like what that Xiaomi put out that vehicle, and you look at, you know, whatever, Porsche, Benz, Hyundai, Volkswagen, all the electric offerings. And the one thing that for me, in my mind, if I was in the auto market, that would stand out is the quality of the service. You know, like if I have an issue with a Volkswagen, I know that I'm going to take it somewhere where they know exactly what they're doing with it. And, you know, I just keep seeing all these horror stories about Tesla service. And, you know, what are you
going to... Well, not only exactly what they're doing, but A, you can get an appointment, and B, they have the parts, right? So, I mean, look, the bottom line is Musk runs this company cutting corners and skimping wherever he possibly can in order to show, you know, some level of profits, especially when it was vesting his stock. That's the funniest, man. I have to say, that is fucking karma. He, you know, he cut corners, didn't develop new models. God knows what kind of financial shenanigans he pulled in order to meet those five stages of getting his stock awards. And then they fucking get taken away from him. and now if the whistleblowers come forward and nail him for various frauds, that would be like, that would be the, what, the coup de grace. He lost all the stock awards and whatever bullshit he pulled in order to get them, he would go to jail for or get booted out of running a public company or whatever.
Well, you know, should have never happened to begin with.
Well, but anyway, so the point you were just making, which is a point I started to make earlier in the conversation and got sidetracked. The reason I shorted this thing is I know the auto industry. Nothing stays new or novel in the auto industry for more than one model cycle.
Right.
Right. A model cycle is, you know, 3 to 5 years, and then everybody's going to have it. I think we may have talked about this a long time
ago. I'm sure we have.
You know, power steering, automatic transmission, FM radio, air conditioning, power windows, right? Somebody had that first, every one of those things, right? And within 4 years or whatever, everybody had it, right? And so it's the same thing. And the thing you hear about the Tesla, which was the funniest part, was, oh, it's no one can do what they do. And the beauty of it is how simple it is. Well, pick one.
Well, know? And they don't have a new model refresh coming out. You know, we're staring at the same models now for a couple of years.
Well, they have what they call a refresh, but for instance, on the Model 3, there were some improvements, like a nicer interior, but then they got rid of the fucking turn signal stalks, which is a huge negative. And by the way, Europe passed a law recently that you're going to have knobs in cars for a lot of key functions. No more of this touchscreen only bullshit, which to me, I think it makes Teslas really dangerous. I think, by the, you know, you, I'm sure you know, we've seen it. The stats say that they crash more often than like any other car. And, you know, part of that for sure is probably, you know, people not used to the instant torque. But another part of it is you have to look down at the goddamn screen to do anything. I'm, you know, so.
No, that's why those buttons in your legacy vehicles are the way that they are and why they're configured and why they have patterns on them and why they're different shapes so that you can reach up and you can adjust the radio without having to take your eyes off the road.
I am so happy. I bought a new car last year. I'm so happy it has all kinds of knobs on it besides the stuff on the steering wheel, right? I think the new Corvette is really cool. It's got that whole line of switches that, you know, that goes down along the center divider. You know what I'm talking? I don't know if you've looked.
It's a nice looking car too on the outside.
But the inside, I think that's cool. Switches are practical and cool, and touchscreens are just nonsense. You know, that has hurt Volkswagen, by the way. We should talk about that for 2 minutes because it's my biggest long position.
Hang on, we will. I'm trying to look at the, this is the 2024 Corvette you're talking about, right? Oh, all right. Yeah, I see like the bar on the passenger side going down the center console. Is that what you're talking about?
The driver's side. Yeah. See all the buttons for the driver?
Yeah. But it's actually on the passenger side of the car in the center console.
Okay, but the buttons like face the driver, I think.
Yeah, it's like a wall of buttons that goes down. Yeah, that is pretty cool. Now, see that digital screen there and that digital display makes sense. Like a lot of other like the Benz EV and stuff like that. But you can still see there's plenty of stuff there on the steering wheel that you can use with your thumbs. With like, you know, the idea of having to go down and fucking use an iPad every time you want to, you know, turn the air conditioner down 1 degree. It's extremely dangerous. I never understood that. Even when I would get into Teslas that my friends had, you know, watch them try to operate it. It's cool at first. It's a novelty because in essence you're taking your phone theoretically and just putting it into your car, and so there's a novelty in that. But in terms of practicality, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Well,
to have to press a digital screen every time you want something.
Car companies did it because it's much, much cheaper than wiring up a bunch of knobs.
Right.
So you know, but Musk tried to stage it as, oh yeah, it's really cool. You know, it's this novelty item. It's like a spaceship. Well, when you're running a spaceship, you don't have to keep your eyes on the road looking for stop signs.
Well, you ever see the cockpit of a fucking airplane or a spaceship? There's a trillion knobs and buttons.
Yeah, well, that too. Knobs too. Yeah, not just touch screens. But anyway, it was a cost saving thing for all these car companies. But you know, now they're going back to knobs. I mean, part of it is because legally they have to. But I will never buy a touchscreen only car. Nor will I buy a car, you know, like BMW kind of does with a touchscreen, but you know, the center knob to pick your menus. So
right.
You don't. Yeah, I'm not going to do that either because you still have to take your eyes off the road, you know. So
yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But I think BMW, I know Porsche for sure does, has you know, stuff on the steering wheel to control stuff, and then key stuff. Most of these guys have like a volume button for the radio, let's say, you know, and whatever. But you know, and Volkswagen had some problems with that. They came out with touchscreen only, and they sucked. So they just improved the touchscreens on the newest models. They're faster, but they're still touchscreens. I have no doubt that their next generation of cars will go back to key knobs for a lot of functions, you know?
So what were you going to say about Volkswagen? You said it was your biggest long.
Yeah, I just want to say this, that you can look at it two ways. One way is it's selling for around 4x earnings as a corporation. And the other way to look at, and you know, plenty of net cash excluding the finance arm, so it's not like loaded with, you know, functional debt, let's call it. But the other way to look at it is it owns 75% of Porsche, which trades separately publicly, and it owns 89% of Traton, which is the truck division. And if you net those two out, it has a negative market cap of in the billions of euros. And you get Audi, you know, Ducati, Bentley, Volkswagen cars itself, Skoda, you know, a couple other smaller brands, Lamborghini, which alone is probably worth 15 billion, you know, euros or dollars. I mean, it's crazy. It's so crazy that, you know, it's like a hugely negative market cap and dirt cheap, and it pays a huge dividend. It pays like a roughly an 8% yield. You know, so I own it. In fact, right now in the fund, because I'm so bearish, it's our only long position. I own a ton of it. You know, people say to me, well, if it's so obvious, you know, blah, 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 blah. And to me, it's like that old joke about, you know, the two economists are walking along and there's a $20 bill in the road. And one guy says, hey, there's a $20 bill. And the other guy says, it must be fake. Otherwise, somebody would have picked it up already.
Right.
You know? To me, that's Volkswagen. It's just hiding in plain sight. People are like, well, you know, you got to deal with the unions because they're on the board, and then the local government has seats on the board. Okay, fine, whatever. At the end of the day, it generates a lot of cash, and it's paying 8%. You know? And they're not. It's not as if they're, you know, it's not as if they're borrowing money to pay the dividend. So one way or another, you're going to get paid to own this thing. You know.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's my long. Enough of that. I don't have to keep going on. People can look at it themselves. Oh, I will say this, that I own it through the ADR. The ticker's VWAPY. There's another ADR, which is VWAGY. The one I own is called preferred shares, but all that means is it's actually common shares that don't have a vote. And so you get a big discount for not having a vote. Your vote would be useless because the Porsche family controls the vote anyway. So, you know, you don't need a vote. So if you're going to get the ADR, I recommend VW Alpha Papa Yankee, not Alpha Golf Yankee.
All right. Well, I want to go back to Tesla real quick, too. Did you see that they settled the lawsuit, the one that they said that they would never settle with the engineer who died in the autopilot accident one day before it went to trial?
Yeah, they weren't referring specifically to that when they said never settle. Musk said on Twitter, and I'm paraphrasing, we will never settle a suit where we know we're right, and you know, we will always pay when we know we're wrong or something. It's paraphrase. So yeah, they settled this lawsuit. That was the Apple engineer in California who crashed on the highway and died on autopilot. And you know, supposedly he was looking down at a video game while he was driving. But as I said on Twitter, you know, this was the time when Musk put out the video saying you don't need a driver here. You know, he's only there for legal reasons. Musk went on 60 Minutes, hands free. No, hey, look, whatever that
Leslie
woman
Stahl was. Yeah, I remember that.
Look, Leslie, no hands. She goes, is the car driving itself? Yep, it's driving itself. You know, he did all this stuff, and then he tried to have these little fine print disclaimers, right, that say, oh, well, you need to pay attention at all times. Well, this guy was a Musk cult boy, and he believed his cult leader Elon, and guess what? He died because cult leader Elon is a lying scumbag. So, you know.
All right, well, now let's go to macro. The way that today looked to me was kind of, you know, we got CPI data that came in hot this week. The way that the market looked to me today, the trade that I saw at the end of the day today was kind of the throw your hands up, fuck it, we're letting inflation win trade, where gold and silver are rocketing, equities are rocketing. And what do you think is going to happen? Do you think I'm right, or do you think we're going to hit a wall at some point and we'll crash and then?
All right, let's unpack that a little bit. I agree that a lot of people now think, well, the Fed's going to throw up its hands and accept whatever, you know, 2.8% core PCE, right? And core CPI is running 3.8%, right? Throw up his hands and, you know, certainly not raise rates and maybe cut rates a little bit, and we're just going to have permanently higher inflation, and therefore gold is flying. That's totally plausible. The 10-year yield is flying, which would also jibe with that theory. Here's where stocks flying doesn't fit in, and I'll tell you two things. One thing has been in front of my letter the last couple of months. Standard & Poor's itself has an amazing free spreadsheet. There's a link to it. If you reach out to me, I'll send you the link. They update it every week to 10 days, showing every dissecting S&P 500 earnings in every possible way. But their key is S&P 500 operating earnings were actually lower last quarter, Q4 of 23, than they were in Q4 of 21. In other words, if you look at the last really 2.5 years of S&P 500 operating earnings, and I'm not even holding them to GAAP, they've bounced around a little bit, but they've essentially made no progress. They've been up one quarter, down one quarter, up one quarter. And this was with over 3% GDP growth, right, for a lot of that time. So if corporate earnings aren't growing with great GDP growth, number one, what happens if the economy does hit a wall? They'll probably plunge. And by the way, why aren't they growing? Maybe they're not growing because costs are growing faster than earnings, right? So that's one thing. The other thing is, if we are going to have a new permanent higher inflation regime, we need huge stock multiple compression, you know, PE multiple compression. So if you look at like what happened in the 1970s when we had the huge stagflation, right? Stocks plunged in, call it the first half of the decade, approximately, not exactly, but, you know, because because even though there was inflation, and back then they would post higher nominal earnings a lot of times, the PE multiples compressed from whatever they were, teens to like 8 or something like that, because you're not going to pay as much of a multiple for earnings if, you know, if rates are high and you can get a lot in a money market or a treasury bond yield or whatever. So once you sort of bottom out on where PEs are, okay, then if inflation is making earnings go up, then stock prices can go up in nominal terms, right?
Right.
But PEs have to crash first. So,
yeah, they do.
So I do not think, because stocks are expensive now, right? The S&P PE ratio is in the 20s, right? I don't think.
The high 20s, I think, right?
What's that?
I think it's in the high 20s, isn't it? It's north of 25.
If you hang on 1 second, I can give you a number. Can you hang on? Let me pull it up here.
I got no life.
Hold on a second. Nor do I. That's why I'm talking to you.
There you go.
Hang on. So I'm pulling up that spreadsheet right now, actually, whatever the latest version of it is. So Q4. S&P 500 operating earnings were $53.90. And by the way, okay, the only reason they were, and that was, by the way, lower than Q2 of 2023 and lower than Q4 of 2021, just to make my point here.
All
but
right.
the only reason they were as high as 5390 is Buffett marks his portfolio.
That's 216 annualized. So you're talking 25 times earnings about.
You're way ahead of me. Right. Exactly. So here. So yeah, 5390 times 4 is 215.60. And where did the S&P close today? 5199 divided by 215.60. 24 times, call it run rate operating earnings, right?
Right.
The historic market multiple is something like 16.
Yeah.
So, yep. You know, I mean, so if we're
and that's the average. That's the mean. It's been below that, you know?
Correct, yeah. So if we're going to have more inflation, you know, we're going to get some big multiple compression. So, you know, so if you're technically inclined at all, you guys, you folks playing along at home, if you pull up a one-year daily candlestick chart.
Fucking cut to the shot of my listeners like crushing a beer can on their forehead. Mark, you're like, take your calculators out if you guys are at the desks, you know. I had a guy fucking email me the other day. He's like, I always listen to you when I'm mowing the lawn. I'm like.
Great. So watch your foot, buddy. So anyway, if you look at a one-year daily candlestick chart of SPY, let's say, right? There had been really strong closing support at like the 10-day and then the 20-day moving average for almost this entire run-up, with a couple of very minor short-lived exceptions. Last week, on April 4th, there was a giant red candlestick that just crashed through everything, right? And I think what we've seen since then is the market trying to sort of grab back up that momentum that it had. And I think it's going to fail. It looks to me like a bunch of days kind of with fingernails trying to grab at that cliff of the, even today, it climbed, you know, because previous support then becomes resistance. Right. It climbed back up towards in the afternoon. It climbed back up above the 10-day and 20-day, but it couldn't hold them, and it closed below them somewhat. So I think it's dip buyers trying to get it back, but I think that candlestick meant an entire change of regime for the market. Now, that said, I am very short SPY. I will stop out probably half of my short position if the opening price on that candlestick gets taken out, and that was in the 523s. It was hang on, let me give you the exact number in case for you home players. 523.52, I think, would scare me that, oh, maybe the uptrend is resuming again for whatever reason that I do not understand.
Well, I think liquidity is just going to run out at some point, too. I mean, I saw today, again, as I've been seeing for the last 3 years, that Philadelphia Fed data showed that credit card debt was at all-time highs again. So, you know, just another day forward at 5.5% rates. It's okay. You know,
yeah. Well, that's
at some point the check comes due, man. I just saw another thing today. Some commercial real estate sold for like 2 cents on the dollar in like San Francisco. There's some building that sold for like $600 million the last time it changed hands in 2006, sold for like $10 million or something ridiculous. And I'm just like, yeah. Okay, like, where are those losses going?
Well, look, well, probably pension funds.
Yeah,
right? A lot of it. But I mean, look, you and I have both been talking about this for a long time, which is I do not believe you can have an economy, an asset base built on 15 years of free money. And all of a sudden, you know, nominally money costs over 5%.
Right.
Without things breaking and imploding. And yeah, so commercial real estate lenders have been doing the old extend and pretend. But at some point, you got to stop pretending and extending, right? So, you know, but that's only part of it. Yeah, it's the consumer with the credit cards. It's you know, who the hell can buy a pickup truck with a $1,300 a month payment now? I mean, some people are, but, you know, a lot of those are probably going to be coming back too. So, yeah, I mean, this thing has lasted longer than
we thought. Two terrible treasury auctions this week too, I saw.
Well, today's was a little worse than expected. The one yesterday was horrible. In fact, was it yesterday, the 10-year one? Whatever.
Yeah, yesterday was the 10-year with like a three basis point tail or something. And I didn't see today's, but I saw that it tailed, but I didn't see by how much.
Yeah, the 30, well, I saw the yield on the 30 was a tiny bit worse, maybe one basis point or something than the one issued, but it wasn't better. But you know what? That's when the market really took off. Like, it was like, oh, you know, it wasn't as bad as we thought it would be. So is there an excuse to buy stocks? I mean, I think these are just whatever, dip buyers who are going to get burned. I mean, talk about liquidity. So, you know, they've been saying financial conditions are loose, but that's a very circular argument. They're loose because stock prices have been high, right? Once that reverses, financial conditions aren't loose anymore. I mean, you know, money is not cheap. It's you know, moderately, you know, it costs money to borrow money now, for real, you know? And the Fed still is running off its balance sheet. And, you know, this whole thing about the RRP or whatever that they were drawing down, and, you know, that was going into stocks. I mean, you know, that was because people decided they want to buy stocks. They didn't have to – that money did not have to go into stocks and bonds. It went into it because investors got the animal spirits and decided to draw down the RRP and put it into stuff. So – you know, that's not a leading indicator. That was a little bit of a trailing indicator, like, oh, I'm going to buy stocks and now I'll draw down the RRP to settle my stock buy within a day or two, you know. But that said, if it's drawn down, even if they want to buy stocks, where are they going to get the money from, you know? So, yeah, I'm bearish. I could be wrong, but I think this market is hanging on. And I think that giant red candle last week was a major trend change marker.
I am drinking a Pabst. Okay.
I have to tell you a funny story real quick before we go. Speaking of your Pabst.
Wait. But I wanted to comment on something, but now I can't remember what the hell I was going to say. What are we talking about? The price? Are we talking the cost of capital? Oh, I just wanted to add that, you know, maturities are rolling along. People, you know, these refinances that are going to happen, like, it was probably a little bit easier to refinance the first, like, year and a half that they started raising rates. And now, all of a sudden, with, you know, with the line stuck at 5.5%, every fucking refinance that comes due, and I forget who it was that I just saw, it's a pile of shit company. I think it was Herbalife just refinanced some fucking garbage senior secured, whatever, like 13.5% or something. I'm just like, all right, like they're done, you know, like, and that's how it's going to be for everybody.
I'm actually surprised at that because last I looked, spreads were ridiculously tight for garbage, you know, I mean, tight to treasury. So I don't know, maybe things have changed, and maybe that was a fluky situation. I didn't follow that, but
well, other than the entire business model is centered around a mathematical impossibility, I'm not sure how much more of a
the pyramid scheme or whatever.
Yeah, or whatever. Exactly. The old, I'm going to give you a piece of shit product that nobody would be interested in if I didn't staple it to a business opportunity model, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So about your beer, so it's funny. So, you know, I go out to dinner with friends, various people, a lot of times Wall Street types, you know, once, twice a week or whatever. And, you know, I used to drink right along with those guys. And now I'm just like Diet Coke. And they're like, you know, what are you on the wagon? Or you got a problem? I'm like, no. I try to limit myself, you know, unless I'm on vacation, to like three drinks a week, only because I know it's not really good for your body the more you read about alcohol.
It's terrible for you.
Yeah. And then, you know, you start packing on pounds. It's just empty calories. So I'm like, and you know, I could, with booze, I've always been take it or leave it. I don't care. But, you know, I like beer. So what happens is my girlfriend every Christmas gets me memberships in the Craft Beer of the Month Club. And she got me two different clubs this year. So these great craft beers come in every month, a shipment of them. Sometimes there's like a dozen of them, and they're just piling up in boxes. So I have to do my drinking at home if I'm going to limit myself.
Well, you should have told me that the other day when I said I was in Manhattan and I'm going to come over for a coffee. You should have said my fridge is stocked full of craft beer that I can't get rid of.
I would have shown it to you. I mean, in fact, you I didn't know what happened there. Yeah, I mean, for people out there who don't know, I got a text from Chris in the morning, like, hey, I'm in town. You want to get together? I said, I don't really want to leave the screens, but come on over. And then I never heard from you. So
yeah, well, I had a friend from out of town that I would have normally never been able to see came into town, and so that sadly took precedence. But I'll be back, and we will get that coffee or beer for sure.
Well, yeah, you come over, I will show you, and I really want to show it to you because I know you know your beer. I don't know why you're drinking Pabst. Is it because you're short today and the market went up, or what?
I don't know. No, it's because I live by a deli that sells it. And, okay. You know, it's reasonably priced, and
yeah. As I said, the market went up.
It's like
up.
A comfort beer. I've been drinking Pabst since I was much younger. But look, I'm with you, man. I have actually gone through some of the longest bouts of sobriety that I've ever gone through over the last, like, probably 6 months. And it's been wonderful, to be frank with you. It's just been great.
You probably in the past, I mean, I think you were a bartender at one point, right?
Mm-hmm. Part-time.
I mean, you probably drank a lot more than I ever did.
A ton.
Yeah. I mean, alcohol has never been an important part of my life. It's like, yeah, I enjoy a beer, but I don't want to have too many because I don't want to get fat, you know? So, so it's a little, it hasn't been a handicap. I like Diet Coke as much as I like beer.
I like Diet Coke too.
Yeah.
But you start to realize with the alcohol, there's a couple of things that I realized just over the last few years. The first is that, you know, once the fever breaks, and by that I mean, when you're drinking, if you ever read like Alan Carr, Easy Way to Stop Drinking, he talks about this. Excuse me. But once you're drinking, you have a couple of beers, you wake up the next day and you go through work and, you know, whatever.
It's a classy show, huh?
You get, who cares, you know? You think anybody's made it an hour and 11 minutes into this interview? This is fucking me and you just fluffing each other at this point. But what you learn is that once the fever breaks, meaning, you know, the next day you kind of have this anxiety like, oh, I should have a beer again. And part, if not most of what that is leftover anxiety from your previous hangover. And this is even only if you have 2-3 beers. I'm not going out and binge drinking or taking 20 beers to the face, you know, but like if you can stop for 2 weeks, usually around 10 to 14 days is where I feel it. If I take 10 to 14 days without drinking any alcohol at all, I feel like I'm in a completely different, calm space mentally. And that's something that I learned over the last, you know, few years that I really embrace about. I mean, aside from the fact that it's terrible for you, right? And aside from the fact that you're borrowing happiness from today, from tomorrow to take it today, which is essentially what happens. You're relieving anxiety now, but it'll be visited upon you twice as much tomorrow. The point is that just once you take a break, like I took like about 40 days here. I went on a trip 2 weeks ago and the 40 days before that I took off and it felt fantastic. Like it just felt, you know, I started eating more, unfortunately, but what were you going to say?
No, I was just saying, I'm just one of those people. I've just never had a drink to relieve anxiety or even, you know, well, I guess when I was in college, you'd drink and to get drunk or whatever. But, you know, even to get a buzz on, I just really like the flavor of an interesting beer or for that matter, you know, an interesting whiskey, you know, like, you know, we have a couple of great, you know, one's a blended, one's a single malt. These Japanese whiskeys are really great. And it's funny, you know, when I have that, maybe, you know, they sit around forever because maybe 3-4 times a year I'll have one drink. It's when I'm watching inevitably a gangster movie and the gangsters sit around and they pour like the whiskey, right? Except when it was like Narcos and then they were pouring like the tequila. I don't have any tequila here.
Even like detectives in the 1920s used to keep whiskey in their desk.
Exactly. They keep it in the desk. Not the 40s, the 50s, all those film noirs. They always had a bottle of whiskey in the desk. So did the cops for that matter. And they pull it out, you know? So yeah, if it's a scene like that, because I watch a lot of movies, as you probably know, it's a scene like that. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna join them. I'm gonna get into this mood. And so I'll have like a little glass of the whiskey. But yeah, I like the flavor. I don't drink to get whatever.
What's the best craft beer that you had out of this new selection that you got?
There's so many. I would go over there, but the microphone is tied here.
You're like Trump with the Bible verses. He's like, well, I guess they're all kind of my favorite.
No, I'm not. It isn't like that. I
kind of just like them all.
No, I never remember the names. Like here, if I, like here, here's this under my desk here is, here. Okay, so this one's in cans. There's the Honeyed One High Hops Brewery in, where the hell is this? It's, hang on a second. It's in Windsor, Colorado. Okay. This is Fayette Brewing Company, Embers, Chocolate Hazelnut Porter. Ugh. These guys are in Boise, Idaho. Here's a Sofa King Dreamy Tropical IPA. This is from, same thing, Fayette Brewing in Boise, Idaho. Here's a, hang on a second.
Now, the first two sound terrible because I don't like honey in my IPAs and I don't like deep chocolate porters, but the tropical IPAs can sometimes have some nice, like, flowery kind of, like the Ithaca Flower Power is like one of my favorite IPAs. It's a great fucking beer.
That's my girlfriend's favorite IPA. Okay, so wait a second. So I literally have, okay, so now here's another box. Okay. Oh, this is German. Hofbrauhaus Friesing Dunkel, dark lager.
Oh, okay.
Is this from Germany? Probably from Germany. Okay, so, all right, so that's one. And then also in this case or this box, quad dark unfiltered quadruple from Saint Foyen brewery, maybe Belgian.
What's
or something.
That like fucking 10.5%? I'm gonna guess or
11,
something.
11, yeah. 11. Okay. Okay. So there's that one. There's a bunch of bottles of that. Actually, it's those two in here, and I have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 5 bottles of each of those. Okay, hang on. I got one more. Hold on.
I like Germans, but I like nice, cool, crisp pilsners in the hot summer. That's about it for me in German. I can't drink Oktoberfest beers. I don't like super malt forward beers.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, here's the next box. Alamo Amber Lager. A Vienna style lager with notes of caramel for a little something extra. This place is in where are these guys located?
I don't want something extra. I want something less. Maybe San that's Antonio, why I'm drinking Pabst.
Alamo Beers in San Antonio. Luna Coffee Stout.
Ugh.
That's where are these guys from? These guys are, I don't know. I can't. It's somewhere on here. Hang on a second. All right. Oh, wait. Yeah. Alamo Golden Ale. So I got an amber from them and a golden ale.
Any of those stouts, are they in 16 ounce, like with widgets in the cans, or are they all just regular cans?
I sometimes get those, but these are just all like 12 ounce bottles.
Okay.
And then an IPA from Hinterland is the brewery IPA. These guys are located in, I can't read the label. I don't know where they're located. But anyway.
So if any of my listeners know any of those, they should hit you up on Twitter and let you know which to drink and which to avoid, right? I'm a skeptic, so I always think like, well, if it's included in some like mystery beer club, it's probably shit. You know, that's...
No. You know what? I've had so many different ones I can't even remember, you know? The only ones I remember are the ones I always get in restaurants, you know, like I really like an Allagash wheat beer or whatever, but that's almost mass market at this point. These are much more
still
obscure.
A good beer. That's my flying home beer. Anytime I don't know why I have these routines with certain drinks and beers. Like I always drink ginger ale on the plane. I always drink champagne at certain times, but Allagash white is when I come home from a trip. I always go and I unpack and I get my shit home no matter what trip I'm in. If I'm gone for more than a couple of days, I always go to the same bar and I always get an Allagash white. It's like my welcome home present. I don't know why. Just comfort, I guess.
But, well, that I first had that, I think, up in Maine. I think it's from Portland, Maine, right? Or somewhere in Maine. And there's a great chain of called Luke's Lobster. Luke's Lobster Roll. You know, do you have them in Philly?
No, I don't think so.
Well, anyway,
we have Tony Luke's.
What's that?
We have Tony Luke's.
Oh, that, what is that?
Yeah, a bunch of Italian guys serving cheesesteak. Just got nabbed for tax evasion this year.
Yeah, cash only.
Go down
cash
there, try ordering a lobster roll at one of those places, see what they do. The fuck out of here, you pompous motherfucker. speaking of which, this is why I love New York. I got a haircut when I was there like last week, and I'm sitting at this barbershop. And this guy, and it's in Midtown. This kid walks in, And the guy goes, you know, hey, how you doing? I'll be with you in a second. And the kid goes, yeah, good. Listen, I need to do some fucking thing with this shit. And points to his points to his face and his hair. And that's how he ordered his haircut. And the guy's like, okay, I got something for you. Sit down. You know, I was thinking, man, I went in there. I was like, hey, I want like a number one and, you know, don't shape up the sides and whatever. The guy from New York walks in. He's like, yeah, I need to do something with this fucking shit on my face.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. You know, I'm watching. I talked about it on Twitter, but it was a series from 2022 called The Offer, and it's I think it's 10 parts. It's behind the scenes in the making of The Godfather.
Oh wow!
It's on Paramount okay. Channel. But it's what it's really about. It's half about that. And what you reminded me of it there is they had to deal with mobsters in order to get the movie made in New York. It's pretty entertaining. But it's also about Hollywood itself in like the late 60s, early 70s. And it centers around Robert Evans, who was the most entertaining guy ever. Did you ever read or hear or see the movie The Kid Stays in the Picture?
No.
Oh, my God. You got to write down The Kid Stays in the Picture.
I put it right here next to Apocalypse Now, which somebody told me last week I need to watch also.
You've never seen Apocalypse Now?
No. Is that bad? I got the same response from them. They're like, dude.
Make sure you see the director's cut, which is probably the only one out there now, which okay. is the long version. Apocalypse Now is a friggin' masterpiece. It's like a war movie from another planet. I mean, there are plenty of great war movies. This isn't even a war movie. I don't know what the hell it is. It's stunning. But anyway, so back to the what were we talking about? Oh yeah. Back to the offer. So it's entertaining as hell, but Robert Evans, who produced, well, he ran Paramount when they made The Godfather, Love Story, Chinatown, like a lot of massive hit movies. He was such a character. Just write down the documentary, The Kid Stays in the Picture, because he narrated it when it came from his book. You'll see how entertaining this guy is. And then you see, and then you watch The Offer, and you see him in The Offer along with the other characters. It's entertaining as hell. I can't wait to get back to it. I was going to watch it, you know, before we set this thing up. So yeah.
Okay, will do. So I got some.
I also highly recommend, the Japanese show that's on Hulu that everyone's watching. That's so great.
Which one is that?
Geez, why am I drawing a blank? It's about the warlords in like, you know, whatever, hundreds of years ago.
I don't have Hulu.
People know what I'm talking about. I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, it's also really entertaining. You don't have Hulu? What do you have?
I got Netflix and Peacock. That's it. You know, it's fucking ridiculous. It's insane, and it's getting even worse with the sports. You know, I just want to watch an NFL game. I got to have Amazon Prime now. Like, fuck you.
So you don't have Amazon Prime to get deliveries anyway?
No, I don't, because I don't fucking order shit from Amazon like all these sociopaths in my building. I can't even get through the goddamn lobby every day, and I feel like I want to just start giving the fucking UPS driver hundreds, because I can't believe how much shit he's got to haul inside the building every day. It's absolutely insane. It's like Fantasia. There's fucking just boxes on top of boxes on top of boxes, and it just never stops, and people are just ordering, like, you know, keychains and lighters and fucking Q-tips and, like, anything. Time somebody has a brain fart and they're like, oh, I want to order this. You know, we live in the goddamn city. I'm fucking two blocks away from a CVS. Anything I need, I walk over there and
but you know, at least in our CVS.
You know what I order? You know what I order from Amazon? You know what I order from Amazon?
What?
I order, you know what I order online? I order Nespresso stuff because you can only get it from Nespresso. And I order maybe like one or two of the supplements that I take for like after jiu-jitsu, like those things, like amino acids, just because I can't get them anywhere else. They're like specific brands, but that's it. I'm not an online shopper. Like, and I
can tell you two things for like day-to-day household items,
just say one more thing. And then you can tell me about your day-to-day household items. I go to Whole Foods all the time, right? There's a Whole Foods close to me, and I like Whole Foods. It's expensive, but I like their food, and if you like to eat, like, decent food, that's a great place to go. You know, I considered getting a Prime subscription because I thought there was I thought you got a blanket discount as a Prime member at Whole Foods. I thought maybe you get like 10% off each order or something, which, you know, for me, that would add up because I'm spending a couple hundred dollars there every couple weeks. You know, over the course of the year, the membership pays for itself. They don't. They put like two things on special every week for Prime members. This week I looked, it was like, I don't know, you know, ground beef, something I don't even eat, and like laundry detergent or something. And that's it. And you get the two little specials. So you got to like, so basically whatever shit they need to move out of inventory, they put it on a discount and you get it. You know, if they offered you some kind of, like I said, like even just 2%, Target does like 2% with their card, whatever it is, something like that. I'd be, oh, okay, maybe. But for me, there's no reason. And I'm not going to get Prime so I can watch the Jaguars and the Bears in London on Saturday morning. Like, it's just, I would love to watch the game. I love football. But, like, it's just, it's the principle at that point. Because I can't, you know, then you got 20 fucking streaming things at $20 a month, and all of a sudden your cable bill is $400 a month. It's lunacy. Well, and then I got you saying, oh, you only have Netflix and fucking Peacock? Like,
well, so first of all, so I you know, Prime I have because I have Prime shipping. By the way, the Amazon branded credit card, I think it's a co-brand with Chase, if they still have the deal, it's 5% off everything you order on Amazon, no matter what it is, 5% off. It's really a pretty amazing deal. And Walmart.com has the same deal, 5% off there. So on all these household goods, I pull up both websites, and who's ever got it cheaper, whatever, the toilet paper, the cereal, whatever, I order it from there. And it's cheaper. It's much cheaper than in a Manhattan either grocery store or right. or pharmacy. And the other thing is, you go into the fucking CVS here, you mentioned CVS, everything's locked up behind, yeah. you know, behind the glass cases. So I'm going to sit there and wait for somebody to unlock the fucking Sensodyne. It's ridiculous. So, you know, that's why I order it. I just don't want to deal with that shit because we have a bunch of morons running the state. You know, the moron, this guy, his name is Heastie. He's like the head of the state assembly or whatever. He's the most powerful guy. They've been begging him, the retailers, please put some real penalties in for shoplifting. He goes, I don't believe any crime can be decreased by increasing the penalty. I mean, that's the fucking moron running the state yeah. with the governor who's a total coward. That chick is like Hochul. She's like afraid of the crazy leftists. So, you know, it's just, this is a horrible place.
I like they kicked her out of that cop's funeral. I saw that. I was like,
you saw that. I mean,
fucking turn around, get back in the car and leave, you know?
Like, I live in New York.
What a fucking, like, what a terrible token, embarrassing, humiliating gesture to show up at that guy's funeral. I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
This thing with the shoplifting, you know, I said it a million times in this podcast. I'll say it again. It's never a problem until it shows up at one of these guys' front doors. If this guy, fucking Hinkle, or whatever the hell his name is that you're talking about, whatever, who cares? If somebody showed up at his house and started rooting through his refrigerator and eating his fucking, you know, relish and taking his ice cream, all of a sudden it would be, where are the police? And this always happens. This always happens. When these motherfuckers show up at somebody's house, it's always like, oh, where's the police? You know, I remember there was some video I posted a couple of weeks ago of some lady in some liberal city that something crazy was happening. Oh, it was like on the subway or something. Somebody was losing their shit and some, like, you know, some lady in the middle of Manhattan's like, where are the police? It's like, you fucking idiots don't want the police around. You know, you voted in the people that want to take the police off the streets. Where are the police?
A couple of things. Well, first of all, the old expression, a conservative is a liberal who's been mugged. You know that, right?
Yeah, no, but that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so the thing is, for sure, New York is just Democrats. I mean, at least New York City. And so what matters is the primary, and nobody shows up to vote in the primary. Like, these neighborhoods where you have the most radical leftists representing them, those people want more cops. But they don't show up. It's not that they voted for these morons like AOC or whatever, Heastie. It's just they don't show up to vote at all. And this is what they get. And it's the crazies who show up to vote to put these people win the primary. And then, you know, no one has a chance against them in the general election. So
I don't know.
I stay in New York because, well, we're tied here for my girlfriend's work. I could do this I could bullshit with you on the phone for 3 hours from anywhere. But the other thing is, I do really love, like, you know, it's a 10-minute walk for me to the Met Museum on a Saturday morning. I mean, there's so much stuff I can do, the cultural stuff I really like that you really can't do anywhere else. So, you know, I just paid
And there's like one of every shop there, and like 7 new restaurants a day open. That so you if you wanted to, that you could go to a new restaurant every day for the rest of your life, which
you
I
could,
think
except restaurants have gotten so obscenely expensive. I mean, even my diner, I get delivery from my local diner like probably 4 or 5 times a week, you know? And it's like, you know, it used to be like a turkey burger used to be $10.95. That's now $16. It's like every single menu item in New York City restaurants is up 50% since COVID. It's insane. You can't get out of a diner anymore for less than $50 a person. It's ridiculous.
Well, so maybe you should go up to Montreal and visit my favorite diner. It's called Bobien Nouveau Système. It's I'd be interested to see what the prices are up there, but the exchange rate's really good. So
you
think
have a favorite diner in Montreal?
Yeah, fuck yeah.
How does that happen?
Well, I spent a lot of time in Montreal. And so, you know, eventually.
Well, how did you wind up spending a lot of time in Montreal?
I went up there for the first time in like the 2010s. At some point for like a New Year's Eve, had a great time, met a woman, you know, went back a couple of times to, you know, date and socialize. And then when that relationship
ended. So
you have
a girlfriend up there? Oh, the relationship ended. Okay.
Yeah, when it ended, I just kept going back up because I really liked the city. You know, it's just Montreal is a great example of like, if you're going to be obscene with taxes, like at least make the city look good. Like,
yeah.
Montreal's metro is fucking a masterpiece. I am obsessed with their metro system. Like, it is just absolutely beautiful. The city is beautiful. It really is. And it's clean, and people are fucking nice. And, like, they stop at street signs when they're supposed to, and they give way to one another. And, like, you know, now I know Quebec is hyper-liberal and extremely expensive. But having said that, at least, you know, 65% people are paying in taxes appear to be going, you know, it's like,
is that what they pay?
It's ridiculous. I don't know if it's 65%, but it's obscene. It's more than New York, I think.
Wow.
And so, you know, then when I'm in Philly and, or you're in New York and you're paying these exorbitant taxes and you look around and all you can see is some guy shitting in a bag, you're just like, you know, like, where's the tax money going? I can't even get out. Dude, I can't even ride the fucking subway in Philadelphia. Like, I will and I do, but, like, I don't like it. And it's not because I'm scared, and it's not because I can't, you know, handle my own business or mind my own business, because I can. I'm 6'2", 200. I'm not worried about that. It's just disgusting, dude. It fucking stinks. It looks like shit. There's fucking drug paraphernalia all over the place. It's just, dude, it is chaos. Our fucking subway system is absolute chaos in Philadelphia. So I just wonder, like, you know, where's the fucking money going? And it's crazy. And then I see, like, you know, these, like, cute little, like, nurses going to Jefferson and Penn, like, riding by themselves. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, if that was my daughter, I would be – I'd be really, really nervous.
Yeah. The money goes to union contracts. That's where it goes to. Really fat union contracts probably is where it goes and just gets wasted. I mean, the MTA here is – look, I mean, I have to
say – And the fucking, you know, every day there's a – new parade for some new liberal cause going through the city as well. And that's the other thing with a big float and, you know, drag queens.
Did you get rid of your crazy leftist DA? I forget. Was he recalled or fired?
No,
or something?
No, he's still here.
He's still there. Yeah. Okay.
We got rid of our mayor. So our new mayor, Sherelle Parker, actually, I mean, it was always going to be a Democrat that got elected, but she's a little bit more into law and order, and she's a little bit closer with the police department than Mayor Kenny. I mean, Kenny was just pretty much despised by everybody in law enforcement. And from what I understand, Parker has a little bit better of a line of communication. The Republican, this guy David O, I had him on my podcast, actually trains at the same jiu-jitsu gym that I go to. Super nice guy, you know, didn't even come close. And he ran a pretty good campaign. I thought that, like, his shit was everywhere. He had a ton of advertisements, ton of, he had the support of Chinatown. He was huge in Chinatown because he's, I think he's Korean, but had a big following there in an area that normally would have gotten a lot of Democratic votes, but Parker just blew him out of the water. The one win for Philly was that Parker, in the spectrum of Democratic candidates that ran in the primary, was the furthest to the center than the rest of them. I mean, the rest of them were absolutely batshit insane. And so, you know,
that's what we had here in New York with Adams. He was basically the centrist
right.
Democrat who ran and won. And it's hard to believe that, you know, in the 1990s, Rudy Giuliani, before he went crazy, won the mayoralty as a Republican two terms in a row. I mean, but that's how bad New York was. I mean, crime was so bad. Everything was so out of control that, I mean, they were close elections, but he won as a Republican. And then Bloomberg, who won three terms, he ran as a Republican his first term, and he won. It was, like, shocking that we actually elected a Republican. Now it's like unfathomable because people are so knee-jerk, they won't even think about the candidate. You got Republicans who run here, they're, like, pro-choice. You know, they're like, liberal Republicans, and they still, you know, they don't have a fucking chance. So, yeah.
Anyways, the world's going to hell, but we're both alive and kicking. One more day, and I don't know, man. I just feel like it could be any day that I'm going to wake up and I'm going to check the news and something will have broken in the financial world or in the world in general, you know, sadly.
Well, of course, the market, then you got to start, if you're short or whatever, then you got to start worrying about the Fed put. Something breaks, what does the Fed do? Now, if something breaks and we've got 3.8% core inflation, you know, they're kind of fucked, but that doesn't mean they won't step in anyway and worry about the inflation later.
Right.
I mean, you know, it was the big expression in like 2008, you know, kicking the can down the road. These guys are total can kickers. All these central bankers are, you know. I said about Musk when the stock was tanking and he all of a sudden tweets about the robotaxi. I said, all these guys used to kick the can down the road. He kicks the scam down the road.
Yeah. I mean, but that's really what it is. That's like I said before, didn't I say? It's like Musk quantitative easing. You know,
you said that.
Every time you do it, the fucking lie has to get bigger, and you keep going and going and going until something breaks in a big way, instead of just saying, hey, you know, I fucked up and we need a year to reorganize the business and get back on track, or, you know, hey, we got to take the recession here. It's going to suck for a year, but then things will get better.
Well, the problem is then he'd essentially been saying, he'd essentially have to say, all we are is a car company, and it gets re-rated down 90%. It's going to happen anyway. It's just happening very gradually. Not that great. It's pretty fairly slowly. Let's put it that way, you know, but it's going to happen. I mean, my cover point, I'm short a lot of Tesla, and my ultimate cover point, at least, you know, for the, call it the core position, is like in the 20s per share. And that's probably generous, you know?
Yeah. Well, if it goes to 20, it's probably going to zero.
No, not necessarily. No. If it went to 20, it would have a market cap of $64 billion.
Yeah, but right? they'll be selling equity at that price, right?
Well, no, you know, maybe it's at $64 billion, and you know, they whatever. Maybe they can get this business to make, you know, $250 a share,
right?
And
okay.
It's, you know, I mean, it's. It, they don't have to go bankrupt. Now, of course, you know, unless there's something behind the curtain that's particularly bad. But, you know, $64 billion. Hang on. I'm just pulling up GM. GM is $50 billion, right?
Right.
So, you know, and GM is much bigger than Tesla, and Tesla is no longer growing.
And what's,
you know,
Tesla bringing to the table that GM isn't? That's the key question, right?
Right now, nothing anymore. Just
a guy in a robot suit?
I mean, you know, so I'm looking here like here, so Ford, what's Ford's market? Ford is also like $52 billion.
Right,
roughly.
So the question is, what's Tesla doing that these two aren't? Where's the
disruption?
Well,
nothing anymore.
Right.
Nothing. So that is the point. I mean, yeah. So that's why I'm saying it's not at all unfathomable that Tesla winds up a $20 stock. It would probably still be generous. I mean, if they're selling 1.6 7 million cars this year. I think GM sells like 4 million cars. I forget. You know, whatever. So, I mean, it's ridiculous valuation. I mean, they could be $10 stock, but that doesn't mean they have to be bankrupt. They could just, you know, be another slightly profitable auto company. You know.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Spiegel. Appreciate your time, brother. It was good.
This was awesome. This was a lot of fun. Always look forward to it. And yeah, next time you're in New York, you can drink your way through my refrigerator.
For sure.
What's funny is I have all these different beers. I put one of each in the fridge, and all the rest of them are in boxes under the table here. Because otherwise, I could fill the fridge with them, and the girlfriend would throw me out of the fucking place.
When
so
when I pass out on the floor in front of the refrigerator, you take that photo and put it out on Twitter.
But you're very
guess who's,
well.
Guess who's coming to dinner?
Sample them. So, all right, man. Thank
good
you.
Shit. All right, Mark. Talk to you soon, buddy.
Take care. Okay. Bye bye.
That was the one, the only Mr. Mark Spiegel. Good to have him back on the podcast. He, good buddy of mine now. He's been coming on for quite a while. And, hey, the tide could be turning, Mark, on the old Tesla bet. You never know. It's been many, many difficult years. Of getting it wrong and just eating large quantities of shit in general. And it looks like the tide could be turning. And certainly I agree with Mark as well. So, all right, fools, got a bunch of great guest ideas coming up. If you enjoy the podcast, check out my sponsors over at JM Bullion. Email Laura at jmbullion.com. Check out the Swan app if you're interested in Bitcoin. That link, $10 free, is in my podcast description. And shout my buddy George Gammon over at Rebel Capitalist Pro out. Ask him for a free trial. Tell him QTR sent you. All right, fools, I'm out of here for now. Peace.